My name is Alex. I'm standing in for Honorable Gillion, who is on a party business mission in the Western Cape, so she won't be with us for the whole day. With me are members of the Health and Social Services. I'll give this opportunity to members to introduce themselves.
My name is Mafuso Landomin, member of the committee. My name is Eltona Hika, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dalmaine Christian, also a member.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, you are welcome. May introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, American members. Thank you very much for the invitation for us to come and present our annual reports for the financial year 2018-19. Firstly, let me put an apology for Minister Mkhize, who is unable to be here with us. He's on an official assignment by the President. He's traveling for a BRICS meeting in preparation for the heads of state. So he's traveling again today. Also, just to indicate, Chair, that we have a team here from the officials of the department. On my right hand is Dr. Aliman Pillay, who is acting DG for the department. Just to indicate to the honorable members that there was some change in the department in the last week, where the DG who's been serving has left the department at the end of last week. It was a combination of some requests which he had made earlier on. He just disorganized us a little bit in the sense that although the request had been processed, by the time it was approved by the presidency, the time frames were very short. The request had been made earlier for her to undertake other activities that she requested to do. So Dr. Amber Pillay is the acting DG as from Friday. So he's the one who's leading the team. Can you, the rest of the team, maybe just quickly just introduce themselves and then their positions? And then
thank you, Deputy Minister.
Honorable
members, my name is Dr. Valerie Rainey. I'm head of corporate services at the National Health Department.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Gail Andrews, DVG for Health Systems and Governance.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Yawin Tane, DVG for Communicable and Non-Communicable Governance.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Anneli Schwarzwelle, acting DVG Primary Healthcare and Hospital System.
Good morning, I'm Alistine, I'm a journalist with Spotlight.
Good morning, I'm Libera, I'm also with Spotlight.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Kizwa Ngobese, Deputy PLO Minister for Food.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Kizwa morning. I'm Adrian. I'm with the PNG.
Morning, everyone. My name is Bishop Fan. I'm the committee. Thank you. Committee. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I explained earlier that the chairperson of this committee is somewhat by the party. The party belongs to so our customs to share this meeting as a member of the committee and help run the meeting. And their apologies. If you could just tell us what their apologies are.
Good morning, everyone. Mark Bowen, Committee Secretary for the Committee. The apology we received is from Honourable Chairperson Gillian, like Ms. Nchabaleng had said, she's been called away to other duties, and then Ms. Becky here, she's also not well. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. The purpose of the meeting today is to listen to the presentation by the department on the new report. We know that you got an unqualified audit, and we hope you have all that. And FTG keep that standard. But at the same time, we'd like to see lots of emphasis of matter reduced in the company. We do not understand that. This is a company, this institution, and particularly my worries on things that recur. You have this thing as emphasis of money. It comes this year, the next financial year, it appears again, and it shows that instead of improving, we'll end up going down. And actually, the department is going down a little bit in terms of performance. We can't meet the goals we have set ourselves. So as you make this presentation, bear in mind what the AG said in their report, and that a plan was approved the last time, and now the report has to talk to that plan, and then say if there are gaps, how are we going to close the gaps? If we think that we are going down, how do we make sure that we keep up the pace? And congratulations, and I don't think, I hope you're not going to be in Hollywood for a long time. over to you, Leanne.
Well, thanks a lot, Chair. Maybe on your last remark, we have discussed the matter with the minister, and our intention was to get the post advertised this weekend and make sure that come possibly latest by January 1 the post should be substantively filled. We know that it can cause the all sorts of other requirements, interviews, security clearance, competency tests, which sometimes delay, but we want to make sure that the early requirements, advertising, shortlisting and all that, at least that part, if we can delay to be things like security clearance and all those things. Thanks, Chair. As honourable members know that briefly, just as an introduction, that our vision as a department is to make sure that South Africans live long and also healthy. So our medium-term strategic framework is premised, amongst others, on that vision, but also on the Vision 2030 of the National Development Plan, including the fact that South Africans should have to live on average at least 70 years, the reduction of TB and other communicable diseases and also non-communicable diseases. Injury and accidents should also be reduced. We must make sure that the health system is overhauled and reformed with the primary health care as the foundation of that system. Now, in terms of the MTSF of 2014-2019, which is on the fifth administration, which this report is based on the final year of the fifth administration. Amongst the commitments which were made in terms of that MTSF, number one was that we should progressively move towards universal health coverage. So the report will indicate where we are in that regard in terms of introduction of national health insurance. The report will indicate where we are in that regard. That we must improve overall quality of care in terms of human resource, in terms of equipment, facilities. The report will indicate what steps were taken. That we must implement a re-engineering of the primary health care system. In our report, that will come out as to what are the steps in terms of improving the facilities, making sure that more of our primary health care facilities achieve what we termed the ideal clinic, just as an example. So the report will cover that. The other commitment which we made in that MTSF was the reduction of the costs of healthcare. We know that we still in South Africa operate a two-tier system, where on the one hand we have the public health system, which is taking care of 85 to 86% of the population, which is strained in terms of capacity, financial, human resource, overburdened in terms of the demand for services in our facilities, and therefore compromising on quality on the public health system. On the other tier is a private healthcare system, which is over-resourced, looking after a few people, 15% of the population, but very high cost. As we sit here, all honorable members, every year we get increased in our premiums for the healthcare, for the health cover, for the permit, for gents, for all our health cover. So one of our targets was to take steps to reduce the cost of healthcare, and honorable members would be aware that together with the Department of Trade and Industry, formerly Economic Development, we worked together to institute a health market inquiry, which was presided over by the retired judge, Chief Justice Sandy Lenovo, which released its report a few months ago, which indeed confirmed that regulatory steps need to be taken to reduce the cost of private health, which is over-concentrated by a few private hospital companies. So these are some of the steps which we have taken in terms of addressing the high costs of health care. The other target is in terms of improving human resources for health. The report will indicate steps which were taken to make sure that our health facilities can be better capacitated in terms of medical practitioners, nurses, other support staff. That will come out from the report. Improving leadership. Many of our facilities, over and above shortage of resources, management capacity is also an issue. So the steps which have been taken to improve management capacity will be indicated. Improvement in terms of infrastructure and equipment is also one of our targets. Improvement, also the next one, a focus on HIV and AIDS prevention and successful management will come out from one of our programs. Also, maternal, infant and child mortality to be reduced. That's also one of our outcomes which we will report on. Lastly, just to mention that one of the areas which we've been also looking at improving is management of health information systems. Honorable members will know that among the causes of long waiting times at our facilities, clinics, and including also in hospitals, including even our major central hospitals, the management of records is still a challenge. So it's one of the areas which we've been working on, because quite often people wait long simply to wait, most of the time be taken by retriever of, you know, the records. So that's one of the areas. So with that, Chair, I'm going to ask Dr. Alban Pile to take us through the performance areas or the programs, and the other team members, when it comes to discussions and questions, they will help him to answer. And then the CFO will deal with the financial areas, which you have already commented on. But we are under very strict instructions that we must stay within the time allocated, so that we don't also eat into your time of actual engagement. So it will be done at the maximum possibly by 11, so that there's adequate time for discussion.
Thank you, Chair. So our presentation is structured in line with the annual report and links to the six programs that the department has. So we'll start with program one, which is administration. And Chair, as you correctly pointed out, since 2012 financial year, we've had unqualified audit opinions throughout the period, even in the 18-19 financial year, so we won't get an unqualified audit opinion. So, Chair, in addition to the unqualified audit opinion which we obtained in the previous financial year, we also try to support provincial departments of health in order to improve their audit outcome. And we were able to support the provinces and four provinces have achieved unqualified audit opinion. That's Free State, Gauteng, Mekim, and Pisuki during the 17-18 financial. Moving here to program two, which is about the national health insurance, health planning, and system enablement. I suppose it's important to highlight that the national health insurance bill was presented to cabinet in January. You may know that it's now at the National Assembly, and the portfolio committees are going through engagements on the bill, and this will probably come to this. President was awarded a universal health coverage award recognizing his leadership for national health insurance, which took the country towards universal health coverage on the 23rd of September this year. In terms of the specific performance indicators, it was our target to have the bill in Parliament, but we managed to get it to Cabinet during that period, and it was in, as I indicated, it's now we had also planned during the period to contact private healthcare providers to provide services. As part of the National Health Insurance, the intention is to increase the platform of providers in, from the public as well as private sector providers. And we were able to contract a number of private providers, such as general practitioners, to deliver services to the public sector. And we were able to do that during this period. In addition, moving to the area of health information and health, we have developed an e-health strategy. This was published and disseminated during the financial year. We're also processing we did this through strategic review workshops and consultative meetings. The department, in partnership with the CSIR, has developed the health patient registration system. Basically, it's an electronic system that records patients that visit our facilities, so it captures the relevant demographic information of the patient. That's the first phase of an electronic health record. The idea is, after capturing the initial demographic information, we'll move to the second phase, which is about the clinical information, what is wrong with the patient, what treatment they received, what tests were done, etc., so that this record is electronically available. So we're working with the CSIR on that. And so the idea is just to develop a single database across the country. So we'd also have information about the demographic details of South Africans and to standardize patient registration across the country. The HPRS uses the ID document as registration where people don't have one, and then they bring in their passport and unique identifier is developed by the system. We've developed this national patient registry out of the HPRS, which has been created. And as of the 31st of March 2019, there were 2,955 PHC facilities that implemented the system, and 6 hospitals that also implemented the HPRS system. In terms of specific indicators linked to this, the objective here was to maintain these systems in facilities that have them and introduce them to new facilities. So over the period, we were able to maintain 2,955 PHC facilities and 6 hospitals implementing the HPRS system. And this HPRS system, which registers patients, was able to register 39 million patients on the system, which is over our target, which we had, which was 35 million over the period. We also planned to establish an e-health strategy, which we did during this period, which will cover the period 2019 to 2023, which will overall describe how we will deal with issues of e-health and health-related potential. Then in terms of the NHI evaluation, we had to implement the number of health system strengthening projects across the provinces, and then started in the NHI pilot districts, and we had then commissioned an evaluation report to understand how well did these health system strengthening projects proceed. This evaluation report was finalized and has been disseminated as well. We also plan during this period to evaluate the patient's experience of care so that we understand what the quality of care is from a patient's perspective in our facilities. And 1,586 PSC facilities conducted the patient experience of care survey. Just to give you a visual representation of the HPRS system, in 2019 we have a population of about 58 million people. The HPRS has currently registered about 42 million people, and of that, that's about 74% of our population. We have in the system about 10 million people that don't have IDs but are registered with other documents such as passports, etc. We often ask the question, how many foreign nationals are accessing care in the system? We don't specifically capture it as such, but we know that about 10 million people didn't have ID documents. They may well be South African, some of them, and some may be foreign nationals as well. The HPRS has been installed in 3,502 fixed primary healthcare facilities. Of that, 3,038 PSC facilities have HPRS in them, and 464 do not. And the reason is largely because of connectivity, which is a huge challenge for facilities. So there's about 13% of PSC facilities without HPRS. We have 8 hospitals as of August that have HPRS in them, and the intention is to expand the number of hospitals that have HPRS. Purchased over the period about 20,000 computers, which have been installed in various provinces, and we've provided a breakdown of the provinces and various computers that have been delivered. And with that, we also have to install Wi-Fi routers, etc., because many of these facilities have no connectivity, and so being able to link them up to an electronic system requires full infrastructure to be put in for this. In terms of the patient experience of care survey, we develop a tool by which provinces then conduct these patient experiences of care. The intention is to take note of the responses from patients and where there are challenges with the patient experiences of care. Provinces are expected to implement measures to deal with that. And you see this table identifies the number of facilities by province that have implemented the patient experience of care surveys, and overall the satisfaction rate across the various provinces. So overall, you see it's about 78% across the country with provinces varying between 77 and about 82% over that period. Moving then, Chair, to the issue of monitoring medicine availability, which is important. We've implemented across our facilities electronic systems to monitor medicine availability, and we have established what we call a medicine surveillance center, both at a provincial and a national level, to enable provinces to have an electronic site of medicine availability on a day-to-day basis, so that they're able to intervene where there are shortages in medicines and be able to take the necessary remedial steps. You will see that 3,598 health facilities have been reporting availability into the National Surveillance Center. Where they report their availability, provinces are expected to then respond to where facilities don't have stock and deal with that. We have also implemented the centralized chronic medicine dispensing and distribution program, where patients don't need to come into our facilities to collect their medicines. They can do so at a point closest to where they live, and we have implemented this across the country. We have to date, at the point of that of the financial year, had about 2.5 million patients enrolled on the system where they're collecting the medicines through the CCMD system. We're also involved with dealing with the use of antibiotics and antimicrobial resistance. As you may know, globally, there's a huge challenge with resistance to antibiotics, and so it's about monitoring the resistance patterns, making sure that antibiotics are appropriately used, and also exploring measures to establish new antibiotics. And we have established a surveillance system for monitoring resistance across the country, and in three provinces we did so in. We also plan to regulate African traditional practitioners, and provincial departments of health and other national departments, as well as state advisors, were consulted on a draft bill, which will then be submitted to cabinet, about the roles and responsibilities of traditional practitioners. We also regulate the prices of medicines in the private sector, and each year we publish what would be the maximum increase of a medicine in the private sector. And in this 2018-19 period, we have finalized that as well. In terms of the medicine availability, we have implemented these systems across provinces and facilities. And you can see in the table the number of facilities in each province that which are predominantly clinics that have the stock visibility system available to them. This allows the provincial officials at a district, regional, as well as provincial level to have full sight of medicine availability at a specific facility, and this then allows them to intervene and address the shortage of any particular medicine. Overall, I can tell you that the medicine availability in the country is sitting at about 85%. The target is to get them to 90%. There are challenges in some cases where suppliers do not have stock of medicines and are unable to supply. And in some cases, the challenges relate to provinces not paying their accounts, and therefore suppliers don't supply. And the third problem is where provinces don't order adequate quantities. Chair, if I can go to program three now, which is HIV and AIDS, tuberculosis, maternal child, and women's health. Firstly here, we have over the period about 692,000 new patients that were started on ART over the period, and a total of 4.6 million patients that were treated with ART, which were remaining in care. There were about 14 million clients that were tested for HIV. These include antenatal patients, against the NTSF target of 10 million tests. 1,385 out of 187,879 infants were born HIV positive, which is basically a 0.74%, which is against the PCR test at 10 weeks. up 79% of the TB client treatment success rate and the TB death rate of 3.9%. We have about 20,530 adherence clubs and 600,000 patients participating in these adherence clubs so that they remain on treatment once they initiate it. Because a big challenge with the HIV is obviously encouraging patients to remain on treatment since it's a life rate. Moving to the performance indicators, the total number of clients that were remaining on ART was about 4.6 million. It's slightly short of our target of 5 million. However, in terms of screening and testing patients, we were above our target, which was 14 million. We achieved 14.8 million patients on treatment. Medical male circumcision, we had done about 595,000 medical male circumcision. And new cases of TB that were detected was about 42,734 over the period. Okay, this slide is about the 1990 target, and it deals with three issues. The first issue is those that are living with AIDS who must know their status, so it's important that those that are HIV positive understand their status. The second important aspect is once they know their status that they should be on ARVs. And the third important thing is that if they're on ARVs, they should be vitally suppressed. And the targets are that 90% of each of these groups should have achieved this target. So if you look at the first 90, which is the people living with AIDS who know their status, you can see across the provinces, which is the blue dots, which identify the target. All provinces, I think you can see, have achieved the target where people living with AIDS know their status. The second graph, which is the second 90, talks about people living with AIDS that are on ARVs. So you can see here, the target, which is in the blue dots again, is actually above the orange bars. And the reason for that is that clearly there are people that are HIV positive that are not on ART for a range of reasons. That's the challenge that the health system has to make sure we get them on to treatment. The third 90 is about making sure that those that are on ART actually virally suppressed, because that's the final objective of making sure that they're well. And here again, the blue bars indicate that the orange bars indicate the performance of each province, and the blue dots are the targets. And there are a number of provinces that have to improve their virological suppression in order to make sure that those that are actually on ARV are virally suppressed as well. Sure. Then moving from the 1990 target. We have also introduced additional data captures that have been appointed in some facilities, and these data captures are given daily capturing targets to make sure that these targets are introduced. In terms of health promotion through the radio talk shows and print media covering MMC will be intensified in the winter campaign, so MMC will be continued during this financial year. The fieldwork for immunization coverage service commenced in April 2019 and we completed in this financial year 1920. Officials from the National Department are also deployed to work directly with provinces, districts and facilities that are underperforming in order to ensure that those that are undiagnosed with TB are found and are started on treatment, which is a critical part of the campaign to make sure patients with TB are put on treatment. Okay, moving to child, adolescent, and maternal health, new guidelines were developed to emphasize a rights-based approach to both sexual and reproductive health services. The institutional MMR continued to decline, reaching the lowest ratio of 102 per 100,000 deliveries. This is a result of the quality improvement plan that we put in place, which is a really good achievement here. And then a national immunization coverage survey is currently underway and will estimate the proportion of...
Okay. just MMR.
Oh, okay. It's the maternal mortality ratio. It's the number of mothers that died out of 100,000 deliveries. And so the intention is obviously to reduce the mortality. And the lower the mortality, obviously, the much better the performance of the health system. Many health systems are assessed against maternal mortality ratio as an indicator of quality in the health system. A nationwide immunization coverage survey is currently underway, and will estimate the proportion of children in South Africa, national and district level, who are fully immunized up to 19 years of age. We have also implemented the HPV vaccine, virus vaccine. This vaccine protects women against cervical cancer, which is caused by this virus. And so the idea is to immunize eligible girls. And in the 18-19 financial year, we were able to immunize 83.1% of the eligible girls in the first dose. It's a two-dose regimen. And then 61.2% in the second dose. 86.7% of schools with grade 4 learners were reached through this vaccination campaign. So the idea is to protect them against cervical cancer, which is the biggest, one of the biggest cancers in the country. Chair, moving now to reducing the under 5 mortality to less than 33 per 1,000 live births. Over the period, we have a survey protocol which was developed and approved by the Ethics Committee, and the training of master trainers who then trained 1,400 field workers throughout the country, which took place in March. We also implemented plans to develop partnerships with the provincial departments for this training to continue for EPI surveillance. That's the coverage. Chair, moving to program 4, which is about primary health care services. Here we focus on the functionality of PHC governance structures, these are the clinic committees, which were assessed, and intervention plans were developed to ensure there's a crucial link between communities and facilities, so that facilities remain accountable to communities in terms of service delivery. Secondly, an ideal hospital framework has been developed, very similar to the ideal clinic framework, so there is a set of norms and standards by which all hospitals should comply, so that we understand what hospitals have achieved a particular target. In terms of the ideal clinic status, 1,920 facilities have qualified to meet this ideal clinic status. 22 municipalities and 110 public health facilities were also assessed for compliance against the national environmental norms and standards. And the training on the norms and standards were conducted at provincial level and three provinces. 12 of the 18 ports of entry were also compliant with the International Health Regulations of 2005. International Health Regulations. We use a lot of acronyms for this.
If we're to use ours, we'll never follow up.
I will try to make sure I explain this one.
Yeah, just an explanation.
In terms of malaria, so the objective is to eliminate malaria by 2018 so that there is zero local cases of malaria in South Africa, but that was our target. And so the National Malaria Strategic Plan has been finalized. So that we can get to this target of eliminating malaria in South Africa, which is possible. So I think we need to revise our target. We need to strengthen district governance and improve the management and leadership of district health system. This is very much part of the NHI recommendations as well, where you would see a district health management office as being a key structure within the national health insurance proposals in order to improve the coordination and quality of services at the district level. So plans have been developed for 10 district structures to meet the minimum requirements in terms of these guidelines. Then in terms of the number of PHC facility committees that have been assessed for functionality, 3,426 of them have been assessed in terms of functionality. And there's been a report on the findings and recommendations which has been completed as well. We also have international health regulations, the IHR, which we have, and we have the Joint Evaluations Committee, or Joint External Evaluations Committee, which basically assesses countries in terms of their readiness for to respond to the international health regulations. So work plan, which is responding to this joint external evaluation, has been developed to deal with each of the recommendations that have been assessed. In terms of improving the quality of services at primary health care level through the PHC initiative, 1,920 PHC facilities in the district have qualified as being ideal clinics. And then in terms of improving access to PHC services for people with disabilities, 42% of our PHC facilities are accessible to people with disabilities. We obviously must improve this, but currently at 42%. Also to improve the quality of services at district hospitals through the Ideal District Hospital Program. The status of 6 district hospitals were assessed to determine their performance against this Ideal District Hospital Framework. The idea is to assess hospitals, identify the areas where there's deficiencies, and then to improve those deficiencies so that hospitals are standardized in terms of their performance. So this slide is about our Ideal Clinics and getting all our clinics to a level where the quality of the standards are acceptable. And this is a key requirement for the Office of Health Standards Compliance, which were 35 facilities, and the NHI for it to be able to contract. So you'll see the orange bars relate to the number of facilities in each province that have reached ideal clinic status. The blue dots are the total number of facilities in that province. So where the blue dot is very close to the orange bar, it basically means that all the facilities in that particular province have reached ideal clinic status, or many have. The further that blue dot is away from the bar, it obviously means that there are many more facilities that need to be improved. So the Eastern Cape is clearly a case where a number of PHC facilities that need to reach ideal clinic status must be improved. Limpopo is another, and then Mpumalanga and Northwest are probably other provinces where they need to improve their number of facilities that are going to reach ideal clinic status. But you can see our provinces overall, some of them are doing quite well, such as Gauteng, where many of their facilities have reached ideal clinic status. Okay, moving to environmental health services, and improving this in the 52 districts as well as the metropolitan municipalities. 22 municipalities were randomly selected and audited against the environmental health norms and standards for executing their environmental health functions, which is important. Secondly, we also looked at the major healthcare risk and waste. And here, 110 major healthcare risk and waste generating public health facilities were assessed for their adherence to these norms and standards to ensure that they comply with the norms and standards. We also established mental health care teams which are supposed to support districts in terms of mental health care services. 3 districts have developed these mental health care teams. Also, we've also developed teams for multidisciplinary rehab. And here we have 2 multidisciplinary teams that have been developed. These teams are made up of physiotherapists, optometrists, audiologists, occupational therapists. In terms of program 4, Chair, is to finalize the malaria elimination plan, which will be printed in the 1920 financial year. The ideal hospital framework will be presented to the National Health Council and the status will be determined in terms of finalization of the district. And an investment case is being prepared to address the underfunding of mental health services in the province. Chair, we move to program 5, which is about hospitals, tertiary services, and workforce development. Here, currently there are 1,928 students in Cuba, of which 647 arrived back in the country in July 2019. In July 2018, we had 713 South African medical students participating in the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro program from Cuba. On the 6th of July, 87 South African medical doctors were trained in Cuba and graduated at the Walter Sisulu University in Mtata. We also introduced a human resources capitation grant, and the idea was to supplement the resources for appointment of personnel to fulfill statutory obligations, such as medical interns and community service. We find very often that provinces don't create sufficient numbers of posts in order for us to be able to place interns and community service in them. And so we supported the appointment of these personnel and 2,638 prioritized clinical posts across the province were established. We also developed systems to strengthen the human resources for health at HRH, internship and community service. We have also established the ICSP, which is the online system in order for interns and community service personnel to apply for posts. The medical internship and the pipeline for the 18 categories of health professionals that are entering the work environment after completing their qualifications. So the online system allows people to apply online for the various posts, which is either an internship or community service in 18 different categories. So a new HRH strategy is being developed. It will provide guidance on the number of health workers that are required for effective service delivery in both the public and private sector, as well as strategies to deal with the key human resources challenges, particularly the numbers of human resources. All nursing programs need to be aligned as well to our higher education qualification sub-framework. And all colleges have been prioritized for the 3-year diploma in general nursing, and these have been approved by the accredited bodies for implementation in 2020. All provinces have also developed and costed a 3-year infrastructure improvement plan for these colleges. So moving to the performance areas, so strengthening the local decision making and accountability for central hospitals so that they can become semi-autonomous, since semi-autonomy would be a key part of the National Health Insurance Implementation Plan as well. Draft guidelines on organizational structures for central hospitals have been developed so that central hospitals can, over time, become semi-autonomous. Also to ensure that the quality of care by improving compliance with the national core standards for central, tertiary, regional, as well as specialized hospitals is implemented. 9 central hospitals achieved an overall performance of 75% against these national core standards. We also plan to improve the oncology services. So a national cancer strategic framework for South Africa has been approved, which provides a basis for the development of oncology services. Obstetric service improvement plans were also developed. The draft for the 2018-19 financial year through to 2024 has been finalized, and this will be the basis for the obstetric services. To ensure effective and efficient delivery of emergency medical services, 9 provincial departments of health were monitored in terms of their compliance with the emergency medical services regulations using the a checklist, which is linked to the regulations, and 9 EMS improvement plans have been revised accordingly so that provinces are compliant with the regulations as required for EMS. To also build new and improved quality health infrastructure in the country, 400 facilities are compliant with health infrastructure norms and standards. 17 clinics and CHCs were constructed or revitalized. Two hospitals were constructed. 125 facilities were maintained, repaired, and refurbished. And 100 facilities maintained, repaired, and refurbished outside of the NHI pilot districts. Moving to the area of personnel, there was intention to improve the management of the personnel data so we can track the implementation of staffing norms and facilitate a human resources planning strategy. A draft human resources regulations have been developed. To also improve human resources planning by strengthening the placement process for medical interns and community service personnel. 100% of the medical interns and community service personnel who studied at South African universities were allocated the placements by October last year for both annual and then for April for the asynchronous allocation cycle. To also develop and support the implementation of health workforce staffing norms and standards, here the ministerial task team was established to support the drafting of the HRH strategy, which will cover the period 2019 to 2024. To also increase the production of human resources for health and strengthen the capacity of the health system through the implementation of the Vidal Castro program. So all students returning from the Cuban program during the 18-19 period were placed in their final clinical training at local medical schools to finalize their training. We also need to improve the management of health facilities of all levels through Health Leadership and Management Academy. So here 22 hospital managers and 107 primary healthcare managers were accessing the Knowledge Hub information system for coaching and mentoring to support them in terms of their leadership and management of our health facilities. We're also strengthening nursing education, training and practice through the implementation of objectives of the nursing strategy. 9 of the 17 remaining colleges have been customized to the new curriculum, which is a 3-year diploma in general nursing. The norms and standards for clinical training platform has also been approved in terms of nursing. We also need to eliminate the backlog of blood alcohol tests and toxicology tests. So 93% of the backlog was eliminated for blood alcohol tests in the Johannesburg laboratory. And in the case of toxicology, 36% of the backlog has been eliminated. Coming to the last program, which is program 6, which is health regulations and compliance. Here, the first was the NAPISA legislation, which is the National Public Health Institute of South Africa, which coordinates and integrates disease and injury surveillance. So this bill was processed by the National Assembly as well as by this committee, but unfortunately the bill was not finalized before the fifth parliament and then lapsed. So I anticipate that we would have to restart the process on this bill. Also to improve the oversight and governance of our public entities as well as councils. So we have a biannual governance progress report that monitors the performance of our public entities as well as statutory health professional councils. We also have a handbook which we have developed for board members serving on these public health entities and statutory councils. So they clearly understand what their governance responsibilities are, what their reporting framework is, and their overall fiduciary responsibilities. Handbook provides them with that guidance. Chair, then just a brief slide on human resources management before I hand over to the CFO. In terms of human resources management, this table summarizes the number of posts that are approved on our establishment, the number of filled posts that we have, the vacancy rate as well, and you will see that across the various programs, the vacancy rate overall comes to 13.3% in the national department. We have between 10.1% and about 14% in some cases, but overall it comes to 13%. Chair, the next set of slides relate to human to finance, sorry, and the CFO will do that.
Yeah.
As you said, Chair, we had an unqualified audit report. We had two emphases of matter, of which I'll address one now in terms of the expenditure on the grants, and the second one was a readjustment of figures. So I have our controllers as to the foreign aid assistance, and then spoke about the reclassification to transfer and business services. So those were the two emphases of matter. When it comes to the first one, in terms of the unexpenditure, we've addressed it quite considerably in the current financial year. Done quite a bit of reprioritization within our own budget, number one. And number two is we're also looking at the reconfiguration of our conditional grants in total. We think that we do have too many conditional grants, too many indirect conditional grants, and hopefully with this reform we'll also address some of the potential unexpenditures on these grants. But I'm sure we'll discuss it with the new financial year's quarterly reports. Just as an interest, the total expenditure is at 98% of budget. The amount itself was 9.4 million. If you look at the economic classification splits, you will see compensation set at 96% of expenditure. The 96% mainly speaks to also the vacancy rate that was shown in the previous slide of about 13%. Business services and capital were the other areas underspent. In the main, it comes from the indirect conditional grants, although we also had some issues within the department, such as the forensic laboratories, equipment that was awarded, but the orders without the delivery didn't take place, we couldn't spend the funds for some of our security systems. The biggest portion, obviously, is our conditional grant expenditure chain, and also the amount spent by provinces. So going through that, you'll see that total grant spend shows 97.9%. That's 44.9 billion against an adjusted budget of 41.7 billion. Slightly lower than last financial year, we were at 98.1%. Our training grant, our tertiary service grant, HIV grant, were all within acceptable norms. Whereas the Latin grant, that's our infrastructure grant, and ABC, our HPV grant, was spending slightly below the acceptable norms. We do set norms per quarter, 25, 50, 75, and 100%, and we try and report within those parameters. So just looking at the numbers itself, you will see that there was quite a big rollover on the revised graph. We're also, before we're showing what the actual transfers were to provinces, to show that we have actually transferred all the funds out to our provincial departments. We have found in the past that some provincial treasuries do not always transfer that exact same amount out to the departments. They also do the cash flow projections. But in this case, this year, most of our transfers did reach the province concerned. The training grant in total, you see, set at 98.6% of expenditure. Most of the departments spent close to 100%, except for Malanga and Gauteng. And if you look at some of the reasons for this, is that Eastern Cape had some delay in assumption of duties of registrars, as well as delivery of medical equipment. Free State couldn't deliver or pay for all the procured medical equipment. Gauteng also had some SCM processes with regards to payment of medical equipment, and also at the end had accrual and unpaid invoices for the value of 1.7 million. again, grants set 98.6% spent, a slight improvement again in terms of expenditure from the previous year of 94.8%. Tertiary services grants at 97.7% spent, Northwest slightly underspent, together with Limpopo, Gauteng the biggest, and indicate the biggest underspent amounts. Looking at some of the variance explanations, Eastern Cape still has an issue with their BAS personal interface. They suppose to also create this with journals, but with the journals they need to have proper audit track, and it seems that in this case they couldn't produce the proper audit trail and the AG couldn't accept such journals. Gauteng has some delays in sourcing of quotations and the finalization of tenants for tertiary service equipment. And the Northwest, which is also under administration, has some delays in the payment of invoices. In the Northwest, we do have quite an elaborate process currently of verifying invoices, again, delivery before we do any payments. HIV TV grants, sitting at 98.5% of expenditure total. The FOPO underspent together with Gauteng, Gauteng again quite significantly underspent on this grant. In Gauteng, the late submission of claims for the MMC and delays in the delivery of condoms by suppliers was the main reason they forwarded for the expenditure on this grant. The FOPO also and some unavailability of male condom stock at the end of the financial year reported. And those are the reasons for the under expenditure. Again, as we're saying, it's an acceptable norm of 2.5%, but one would expect that for the last, for these three grants, expenditure should sit at 100% of expenditure. The revised grant at 96% spent. We've seen quite, you know, an improvement from the previous financial year. We were sitting at 92%. We also had significant rollovers and adjustments in the end, and also by the provincial treasuries. So if you look at what was spent on what we actually transferred, they actually overspent the actual transfer amount. But the rollovers, the provincial rollovers, buffered that expenditure. So our increase in spend from what we transferred, or what was in the Division of Revenue Act, is from 92 to 96% expenditure compared to the last financial year. So we felt that all provinces were you know, getting to the point where they were in an acceptable norm. Free State had some outstanding invoices, they had to approve for these invoices, and they blamed it mostly on some disputes with the service providers, especially the interpreting agents. I think had some delays in various projects. Northwest again has some delays in health technology equipment and some submission of invoices by service providers. And we've addressed that also through the inspection under the intervention. Expenditure 89% of expenditure. In most cases, it was within the acceptable norm. Eastern Cape and Gauteng had outstanding invoices for vaccines. KZN had committed buy vaccine bridges, but it was not yet paid. There was also an issue on the terms of reference and the specification that was used to procure and to revise that. Ulanga had some late submission of invoices and service provider for the car in particular wasn't paid. National health insurance grants, we've essentially had four components. of this. The first one will speak to the infrastructure. We're setting a 77.5% spend. The non-personal services are 71% spend. And it had five components to that in the chronic medical, the suspension, idle clinic, the capitation model, the patient claims, and the magnetic stock surveillance system. Our personal services consist of the agent contracting, which had a 77% spend. Mental health services and oncology services, very low expenditure, let's pay that now. And two, we also had in the last quarter reallocation of budgets to the stimulus package, which took care of the bed and laundry services and human resource capacitation. I think the acting teacher did refer to this one in presentation, in terms of the human resource capacitation. We spent 97% of this fund, but it obviously would have a very serious carrying through effect on the, future budgets, and is in a position now nationally where we're trying to reprioritize funds. And just to go back on the infrastructure, we did receive allocations from FOPO for professional service providers as well as for equipment. Those were not ready to spend in the last quarter, and we got the 3 years adjustment. We have requested for rollovers, and we have approved rollovers for the current financial year for those costs. But we're also in the process of requesting Treasury to, instead of having it as indirect grants, put it through as a direct grant so it can transfer down to grants. On the personal services, I mentioned the issue of mental services and oncology. There's a cancellation of the contract. We've also now revised that contract, and we do allow pharmacists to claim against the contract from National Department of Health. And in particular, case the NHS has made use of this. Non-personal services was the latest payment of supply to CCMTD. We also had donor funds for the CCMTD, which contributed to another expenditure on this item. We also had some implementation issues with the Treasury and CETA, but there was a disagreement in terms of the allocation of that. We have subsequently been able to award quite a number of suppliers based on transversal CETA tenders. Chair, let me leave it at that for now. I just want to go back just to the bed and laundry services one. Bed and laundry, as I said, it was part of the service package. We received the funds in the last financial, in the last quarter of the financial year. We committed all those funds, all 150 million was committed. The issue was we needed concurrent approval for creation of procurement facility, which we got, and we had to place the orders. Unfortunately, there's a lead time of about 6 weeks from order placement to actual delivery to actual payment. But by the end of the second quarter of this financial year, most of those funds have been spent. We'll give you the reports, I think the form on our quarterly expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Alan, for the presentation. Are there any additions from your team? One number is that the plan has the from the department. Are there questions members would like to ask?
I saw the slide 15, something that I can see. Slide 15 on the program. Yeah, patient experience of care services. There's nothing on the Eastern Cape, it's zero and then dash at the end. Yeah, I'm saying the Western Cape, yeah. I want to know what's why is it like that? And there's some of the traditional health practitioners here that were raised. who certificates or gives traditional certificates of competence? Is there a college or somewhere where people decide what the curriculum, who develops, or are we just hearing what people say and then we say the department will give you a certificate? I know there's somewhere in Ghana, actually there's a college or something where traditional practitioners go and they get assessed. And based on whatever assessment that they've agreed upon, then they'll issue a person with a certificate that will be recognized by industry and everybody. So how is this thing going to work here at home? Who accredits who? And based on what? The rest people who save him on this, health committees, we get asked a lot of questions about the rumors that do around. And among the rumors is the Simon program for eradication of malaria. I read something that there's a mosquito that was created. I don't know what this mosquito will do. When it mates with other mosquitoes, they'll produce lesser mosquitoes who then die naturally as time goes. That's how you eradicate it. I don't know whether it was in Kenya or somewhere. This was in the public domain, so we can only get clarity from all people are asking the same questions that I'm asking. I guess we have something for those mosquitoes. And we, at the committee, We went on an oversight with the program in 2008, and amongst the places we visited was the NHI pilot, and we interacted with your teams in that part of the program, and there are lots of questions that we would like to pose, but they are not necessarily. I don't think we should do them in this meeting now because it would be unfair. And I suggest that what we do after our report, we apply our minds and then present those report to the department and ask questions that would be answered in writing, so that we don't prolong our meetings, because we will need 3 days just to discuss 2008. And our experiences when we visited the hospitals, including some of the things we picked, that no hospitals in the area takes Cuban trained doctors. And they said, no, there is no policy against that. But it's so strange that there's not even a single one who gets taken by those ones. So those are some of the things that we raised in writing. And some of issues related again even to that emergency issues, like in terms of health infrastructure. You've got people who TB patients who mix with other patients and there is poor ventilation. You know. Actually our health facilities are helping to spread tuberculosis. So I think there are certain things that will need immediate attention, you know, just to save lives. And from me again, this NAPISA Act, some of us are new in the NCOP and new in Parliament. So if we don't even know that there was a NAPISA something, it becomes very difficult to create something that we don't know about. Maybe we could get some little information about what is this and how far is it in terms of if it is a law already or is it still a bill, and how far is it? You said it went through Parliament. If it went through Parliament, where it is, because our duty is to trace all the things that we have, so that we have tangible evidence that there is this effect. I don't know. moving on to your honourable members, the floor is open. I'll start from the end. Honourable, I'm Christian, and then Honourable Ndongeni. Yeah, in that order. Yes. Not today.
Okay.
Not today. Okay. Over to you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to thank the department, first of all, for coming to us. You have a huge job at hand. I have a few questions of concern to me. And I'm going to zero in on one province specifically. But my overall question, I'll start with those. When they presented the APP to us, they said that the HIV rate in young women are still on the rise, and in young people. Now, according to me, then, the current programs in place are obviously not working if there is still an increase in the HIV rate. So the department has many NGOs on ground rules, Lifeline, all the other programs that are currently working. What are you doing to see to it that those programs are actually doing what they're supposed to do? And what other programs are you implementing there to see to it that the HIV rate is coming down significantly? What is even more concerning is that the mother-to-child transfer is still so high. So what are you doing to educate our mothers, our pregnant mothers, in this regard? We would like to see that rate coming down significantly. These programs have been on the ground for many years now. And there has been no significant improvement. In fact, there's been an escalation in HIV. Then I would like to speak about, you said that you've had an unqualified audit. However, there are provinces who have not done so well. And particularly concerning for me is the Northern Cape. Now, I think you all agree with me that the health services in the country is concerning, regardless of the fact that you have received an unqualified audit. So, you have said that the money that you've allocated has been spent accordingly and spent in the way it was supposed to be spent. But in the Northern Cape, there has been no significant improvement. In fact, the health services in the Northern Cape is on the brink of collapse. From Cables to Kimberley, primary health care, the hospitals, are in utter deterioration. The health services are in shocking dysfunction in that province. And I can give you, I won't give you a lot of examples, I've obviously got many examples. The Professor Z.K. Matthews Hospital in Barkly West. That hospital was opened in 2008. Brand new hospital. State-of-the-art facilities. That hospital should by right now close its doors. It's in utter disrepair, it's falling apart. The roof blew off about 2 years ago. In fact, should the Northern Cape get rain in the near future, that roof will not hold. There's practically no staff there. If patients come to that hospital and they should be transferred to a bigger facility or they need to be operated on, the nearest facility is the Kimberley Hospital. However, these poor patients, Kimberley Hospital, which is less than 30 kilometers away from St. Matthews. However, these poor patients must be transferred to Upington Hospital, which is almost 400 kilometers away.
So even if a patient is in dire need of a cesarean section or an operation, because of policies, currently, these patients have to be transported in these terrible distances. And I mean, I don't think I need to tell anyone around the table the dire disrepair the Northern Cape Road is on. There's no way you can transfer a patient on the Northern Cape Road at night. Absolutely no way. So, the Northern Cape Health Department has had qualified audits for a number of years now. And as I said, from Cairns to Kimberley to Springbok to Calphinia, there is not a single primary health care facility or hospital that is good enough for any human being in the Northern Cape. So I would like to know what the National Department of Health is doing to assist the Northern Cape in this regard. How are you keeping the Northern Cape Health Department accountable for the terrible state it is currently in? The Dr. Harry Surti Hospital, the Kimberley Hospital, the Professor ZK Hospital, the Mental Health Hospital that has taken almost 15 years to build at an astronomical amount, which I don't think I need to tell any of you, that has only recently opened its doors. The major financial loss to the province. So while it's commendable that the Department of Health has received an unqualified audit, I'm concerned about the fact that it's falling apart. And should you implement NHI, I want to know, what are you then going to do differently? What are you then going to do differently for the Northern Cape that's going to see to it that should you prevent a universal health care in the Northern Cape that is going to change the space of health care for our people in the Northern Cape? Then my last question to you is, you've had NHI public hearings in the very same Northern Cape. You've had public hearings over the weekend now. You were in Kimberley on Friday. There was only a handful of people there, about 60 people. On Saturday in the hour, 10 people pitched up. So our people on the ground have either not gotten word that public hearings are taking place, or people are not educated on the ground as far as what the National Health Insurance is about. But what are you going to do? Are you going to go back to the Northern Cape to inform them about it? And what are we going to do then overall to educate our people? Thank you.
You took all of our time.
Thank you. Sorry. I apologize.
But some of the things we raised in this meeting could be raised the other way around. You know, through the committee and getting written answers to them, so that we focus on the annual performance plan for today. But there's no question that is irrelevant. It's a very important question. And this question cut across all the provinces, not only in the Northern Cape where there are problems, but those are everywhere. They're in the Western Cape, they're in Gauteng, they're in Limpopo. So, who was next?
Chair, I think we must welcome the presentation by the department. However, there should be issues that require more clarity in terms of what is presented to us. Chair, firstly, I would like to request that when we are given figures, probably let it not be in percentages, so that we understand the numbers that we're talking about. Case in point, if you talk about the intake of interns from medical universities or whatever, if you say that 100% must be absorbed, some of us find it difficult to understand what is 100% in terms of numbers. 100% can be two. because if there are only two interns and the two are absorbed, it means two have been absorbed.
Mm.
And I think 100% is kind of misleading in terms of giving us the actual picture, and therefore it makes it difficult to actually deal with the oversight that we're supposed to do. That's just one point. The second one, Chairperson, is around, I remember that the department intended to increase the number of provinces with unqualified audits to an extent that there were consultants that were appointed to assist provinces to get better audit outcomes like they were doing previously. And I see that the same culprits still got qualified audits. If you look at provinces that did well, those that did not do well in terms of audit outcomes, they are still the same provinces that had problems previously. What is it now that the department is going to do, seeing that interventions are not yielding the required or positive results? The third one, Chairperson, is around the issue that I think is very, very critical across the country. That's the shortage of medical supplies. Because I think for me, if a member of the public goes to a health facility and not get medication, it then says that that person can sit at home and wait until I don't know when in order to get medication. But how do you balance that with understanding? If you have provincial departments that are understanding and yet there's no adequate medical stock, not based on the availability of medication, but based on the fact that inadequate stock was procured. For me, that amounts to negligence on the part of the person who's supposed to do the procurement. And that there must be corrective measures. Because obviously when you take stock of medication, it's based on what people come for when they visit the facility. And if then therefore you procure less than required, it means that you are not fit to do that particular job. So what corrective measures are in place in terms of taking into account failure of staff or personnel in procuring the correct or the approximate stock of medication? The other one, Chair, is on the TB treatment. I see that at this point, in terms of the report, 79% of the target in terms of TB treatment is reached. And I just want to understand, what are the difficulties? Is it people defaulting? Is it people not going for TB treatment? What are the challenges that limit the department in getting more than 79% in terms of TB treatment? In terms of the HPRS, there are people without IDs, I think it was reported, that are treated in our facilities. Are there any collaborative steps that are taken by the department together with Home Affairs, for an example, to make sure that those issues are addressed so that we capture the correct records and profiles of patients that we see in our different facilities? So are there any collaborative measures between our different departments? The last one, Chairperson, is on the issue of human resources. See, I think one of the challenges that our people are confronted with, those who go to public facilities, is ill treatment by personnel that is employed there. And I think moving towards national health insurance, which is going to configure our health sector completely. What readiness programs are we embarking on to ensure that we have a transformed personnel in our health facilities that will stand up to the challenge of improving these facilities and improving the service that is provided to the people who visit them? Are we not going to see pregnant women chased out of hospitals because they are too old to be pregnant? Are we not going to see people not getting the adequate help that they so need when they visit these facilities? And the last one is around infrastructure. Infrastructurally, are we happy with what the department is doing currently? Because I think that even though we get unqualified audits as a national department, I think provinces are dragging us down. Because for me, at times, it's not about the monetary value, which is quantitative. It's about the qualitative offering that we give to patients. In terms of those, I know that people will sleep on the floor in certain facilities. I would hope that there are measures that are being taken to address that in order to say when we get to NHI, we are not faced with the same challenges that we seek to address by the same insurance that we want to give. So in a sense, I'm talking readiness in terms of infrastructure, I'm talking readiness in terms of personnel, I'm talking readiness in terms of the qualitative service that we provide to patients who visit our facilities.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome the presentation from the department. My question, Chairperson, is there on the CCMDD? I've seen on page 25 that the program is an important innovation, and when we go to the presentation for today at page 60, they say it's at 69%. I want to check with the department, is the program standardized in across the country, and which provinces and home deliveries provided? This is what I want to know. And the other one, given the AG's finding of the lack of reliability of the performance information in program 5, how the department itself is saying that the target in the report are accurate? That's the two questions.
Thank you, Chair. Not to be got to one last today. It's fine. Thank you, colleagues, about the information you give us. But we have some few questions, or some we don't understand somewhere, somehow. And bear on us. We are new in this department. Secondly, we represent our provinces. So it may so happen that we're going to ask a question of which I see in my province. So that's why I say, can you please bear on us? Okay, my first question is on that. How many unemployed graduates or interns hired by the department? If you don't have the numbers for the time being, you can write it and send to our secretary. Secondly, the department uses consultants. How much do you spend in consultants? The third one, do you have any plan to fill the vacant positions? This one is, to me, it's very important. You go to the clinic, you see the staff at the clinic. My mother come to take, sent by the doctor to transfer to the clinic by the hospital. When you go to the clinic, there's no medication. And I say, okay, ma, can you please, I'm going to talk about my mom. She's taking warfarin. Can you please not come back next month? Mm. You don't have any medication. So can you please come back next month? Okay, when he comes back next month, yo, ma, hey, we don't get this medication. I don't know what we're going to do. It's the second month. Please come back third month. How can a person stay without a warfarin for 3 months? Especially to doctors, because they know more than me. So my question is, do you capacitate the staff of the clinic, especially in rural areas? Maybe in town, they are better, but in rural areas, please, guys. The last one, Chen. Is there any plan to deal with Chew? That's only issue about Chew. You wake up early in the morning, you are in hospital at 7 o'clock, you release around about 5 o'clock, you just chew for the whole day for Panado and allergy. So, I don't know, do you have a plan for Chew in hospital? It may so happen that they are illness, want Panado and allergies. But the whole day, guys, and the shortage of staff or doctors, I don't know, even in clinics, especially rural areas. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, I was just saying that there are issues related to supply chain management. That your supply chain management people don't follow supply chain whatever that is needed. Yeah, the procedures and they don't. In some cases, and that was fixed in the 80s. Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chief Department, for the EEP report. But mine is on TB, on slide 19. I see with E-rate is on 3.9 of those who pass on with TB. And my worry is that the TB is curable, even in the West MDR, it is curable. Could it be maybe is the reason that most of our clinic doesn't have medication and people come and buy actual medication and then they default? And also on slide 21, I see that KZN and Gauteng Ibona Bahamba Pedro the rate of HIV and AIDS. And my question there is, are the communities being taught enough about HIV and AIDS and how to take the treatment and that you can control it, and on issues of prevention, especially in schools? Because I come from KZN and I know that most of our girls, children are HIV positive, and it's rising every year, if not even decreasing. So what is it that other department is doing to teach these kids, especially on HIV and AIDS? Thank you.
Yes, the law will ask you many questions about provinces also, because we have the same function more or less. As Parliament, we play oversight on you, but you've got an oversight role to play also in your other entities, including the provinces. When you give people money, if it's conditional grant, it must be that it's meant for this purpose and not any other purpose. And part of it is build the capacity of the provinces to manage their resources and use money, the finance for what they were meant for. I just want to know the health management information system. Some years in Limpopo, there was something called HIS, Health Information System. I think Dr. Pasha knows about it. and a lot of money went into the HIF. And I don't remember ever it being in it being operational or doing something. How is this health information management system different from the HIF system that was developed in the Hobart more than 15 years ago? Will it compromise anyway the confidentiality and patient information? Can any doctor or any nurse go through the system and get information about a particular patient based in another province? Is it possible? Would it be possible to do that? What would be the entry, you know, the entry barriers into the system? Can you be able to tell that this information was copied by so? Because we know in people who send information from hospitals, and those of us who come from townships and villages, including even human tissue. I saw something that there's 25 kilograms of medical waste. There is a lot happening in the health sector that is related to corruption. We just want to be involved the people in the department. The kind of people that we hire in hospitals, the security must be up. And particularly with this the information system, how safe are they? How safe would the patient information, how simple to know the information. The NHI will be implemented all over South Africa. So it's not whether if should you implement it, what will happen in the Northern States. It's going to be implemented in the Northern States. The question is, what are you going to do to ensure that we mitigate against this other shortage? You know, they're coming the road, ambulances, and again, infrastructure, hospitals. What do you have on your plan? Over to you, and the
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to all our members. I'll make a few comments and pass on to Dr. Anban Pillay and the team. Just a few comments, Chair. On firstly, let me just say to the DG, acting DG and the team from a matter which was raised. Public hearings that may just save them from venturing into trying to respond, because the public hearings are an ownership of the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. So the department participates only on invitation. If the committee requests certain information or request for clarification, quite often we make sure that there is one or two officials available in case in any of the public hearings the department is required to explain something. But otherwise, the program, who attends, as you would know, the separation of powers. The department has drafted the legislation, tabled it in the National Assembly. Once it's tabled, it's a property of the National Assembly at the stage. And so we await the report and where the committee will come back and say, these are the findings. The department, please respond to ABCD. So I just want to clarify that we therefore will be out of scope to make any comment on how many people attended, where, what happened. It's really an answer from ourselves. We obviously, as the originators of the legislation, are having an interest for a positive outcome of the hearings, but at the end, it remains only that. Chair, on your question on the health information, I would like one of our team to just respond to some technical detail in terms of issues like security of information. As mentioned earlier on, where we are currently, we're still just on recording particulars of the population to say out of the 57 or 58 million people who are South Africans, these are their particulars, where they are residential, their address, their ID, what, and so on. So we know that these are the people who are servicing. We're moving into, as that is done, working with our technical support through the CSIR, the next step we're looking at, it's what you refer to as clinical information, because at the end we would want to make sure that the clinical information is available, but I don't know whether the Anban will indicate whether it will be gained or respond just on those. All that I can say at this stage is that what you raised is very key. When it comes to clinical information, the security of information, who access it, has to be built in. And she will comment on that. But your earlier question, indeed you are correct. You know, this issue of modernizing our health information comes a long way, almost as old as the democracy. Yeah. I mean, when I was the MEC in Limpopo, and Dr. Ngozana Dlamini Zuma was the minister, we started on some attempt to have a national system. And then there were some initiatives which didn't go far, then provinces went ahead. I know when I was MEC in the Togo, we started something which, and then unfortunately, you know, sometime in this administration, when there is a change, somebody starts another new thing. And that's what complicated things in, for instance, in Limpopo. But all over the country, there were various initiatives. So that's why we're trying to bring everybody together now. Going back almost 25 years back, this HPRS is actually to, and even those who have been elected, I mean, we've had some resistance, even some time in some district, in certain provinces, where people had started their own thing, and they were reluctant to come on board into a national system, but we have had to nudge them, and many of those have now started to cooperate, and we're hoping that with this, because these things are discussed in national meetings, we try to get the buy-in, so that ultimately, even if a particular province has started something, we try to nudge them, if without necessarily doing away, see compatibility, to say where there is a problem of compatibility, can we get your people who produce your system to make sure that it talks to the national system? But the colleagues here will comment on that. Let me ask Anban to, with your team, just go through all the, and then if there's areas which you need to come back, I will do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Maybe if I can just identify which of my colleagues in response to the I think Dr. Anders will deal with the question that was asked about the patient experience of care survey, where the Western Cape had a zero. I think you were asking about that. There was a question as well about malaria, I think, and the particular species of mosquito and what plans we have around that. Dr. Jürgen Play will deal with that. You had a question about the Nakisa bill. Where is it now, and what is the process? Dr. Andrews deals with that, and I think I should be able to assist with those responses. On the question relating to HIV, there were questions relating to increasing the prevalence of HIV for young women, the role of NGOs, as well as the high PMTCT level, and what are we doing to deal with all of that. Dr. Yogan could be able to address those. There were some specific questions about infrastructure linked to facilities in the Northern Cape, and Ms. Annalise will deal with that. I think it was a question around the number of provinces with unqualified audits, and what is the department doing to support provinces. I think Mr. Hanna-Gerber can assist with that response. There was a question around TB, we've got to 79%, and what are the difficulties, why can we not improve? But the urban community assist with that. The question around human resources readiness and personnel for NHI and staffing linked to that, I think Dr. Andrews can assist. And then also the matters relating to infrastructure related to the NHI, I think Ms. Annalise Kelly can help with that. And then on program 5, I think there was a question about performance information and whether that the performance information could be considered to be accurate. I think Annalisa would be able to respond to that as well. The question about how many interns were hired by the department, I don't know if Dr. Andrews has that information now, but she would be able to assist with the response. How many consultants we've hired and how much we've spent, Mr. Vandermeerwe and Ms. Rainey, I'm not sure if they can assist with that. And then the question around our plans to fill the vacant posts, Ms. Rainey would provide a response around our plans linked to that. In terms of queue management what we're doing to deal with that, I think between myself and Dr. Andrews we can assist in the response there. Training of staff in supply chain and so that they follow procedures, I think Mr. Vandermeerwe will be able to provide some insight on that. And then in terms of TB, the mortality rate is high, and what's the reasons for that? I think Dr. Yogan Pillay would be able to provide a response to that. And then communities not knowing enough about HIV, I think Dr. Yogan Pillay again can assist with a response there. And I think DM's provided a response on the health information systems, but I think Dr. Andrews can probably advise on how security of the system is protected and personal information. So Chair, maybe if I can just start with the one relating to myself. On the traditional health practitioners bill, what we have currently is an interim council for traditional health practitioners. And that bill basically puts together a council of traditional health practitioners, and it is their role to define how they would classify an individual as being part of their sector or not. They have had difficulty, I think, as you expressed, in how they would do that, because there's obviously no formal training, etc. The example you gave, for example, of Ghana is helpful, but in Ghana, for example, much of that recognition relates to herbatology, so in other words, understanding herbs and extraction, etc. However, when you move on to the other side of spiritual aspects, then it becomes more difficult about how that can be assessed, etc. So what we're trying to do is get them to agree amongst themselves about what is it that could classify them or not. They've not found it easy, so they've had a battle with that area. The second thing they have to do after they do that is define the scope of practice. So in other words, okay, if you're now within this council, what can you do and what can't you do? Where are the boundaries for doing that? And then what products, for example, can you provide and what can you not provide? So issue about human body parts, etc., all the dealing with that. So the council is busy trying to deal with those issues. And I think the
practitioners are divided into different associations across the country, and so all of the groupings have different perspectives and not driven by any training or anything like that. And so trying to deal with that matter is quite difficult for them. Chair, and I think the other question which I can possibly deal with is how is the department dealing with the issue of keeping provinces accountable in terms of the NHI. I think it's important to say that under the National Health Insurance, there's going to be a centralized fund which is going to be purchasing services on behalf of all South Africans directly from public and private health providers. So the problem that you have currently, for example, the one that you explained, Honourable Member, in the Northern Cape, is that funds are transferred from the National Treasury to the Provincial Treasury and to the Provincial Department of Health. And the utilization of those funds and the division of those funds at provincial level and then even within the Health Department is largely decisions that are made at a local level. But if you're financing a system at a central level and saying that, I know at PHC level this is how much it costs to deliver a service, and you then finance a facility to do that, these problems about not being able to pay for supplies, equipment, and infrastructure, etc., are largely resolved, and there's accountability. And secondly, you also have private providers participating in the space. So there's some options when the public sector is not performing well for patients to be able to access services. So I think that's a very big change from the way the current system is structured. Then I think the point about figures and percentages, we will certainly take note of that. Usually in our annual performance plan, you will see we have figures rather than percentages, and percentages are usually just a summary of the figures achieved versus the denominator. But we'll make sure that we fix that going forward. There was a question about, there's a shortage of medicines, but there's underspending. So how do those two reconcile? And the difficulty is that the availability of the funds, and the CFO will probably provide more detail on this, the availability of funds is linked to the cash flow. So in other words, provinces have money, but they don't have money to pay suppliers now. When they purchase medicines, they have to pay suppliers within 30 days. And that is, and if a supplier doesn't get paid in 30 days, he or she then is reluctant to want to provide additional supplies until they get paid. So what we've proposed in the Presidential Health Compact also makes this recommendation, and we're working with the CFO, together with the CFOs of the provinces to deal with it, is to understand how much is an appropriate budget for medicines for the year for a province, and then to earmark those funds so that they're ring-fenced in some way and protected from other expenditure, so that every month you have a reasonable sense about how much medicines cost for that month in terms of expenditure, so you always have money to pay for it, because the moment you default on payment, you then have this problem of shortage. We anticipate that will resolve the problem relating to unpaid accounts. In terms of the question relating to the HPRS and our collaboration with Home Affairs, so we've been in discussions with the Department of Home Affairs, and the new Minister of Home Affairs, I think, understands what we need in terms of the health system, and so has provided us linkages between our current information systems and the Home Affairs database of IDs, so that you're able to go in and check whether a particular person is on the register of South African. So in other words, if you go to a health facility and together with your ID and biometric assessment, a facility should be able to say that Anben Pillay is a South African and this is his ID. A bit like what the banks are able to do. And to be able to get to that level of access. So that's what we've been in discussions all of here about, so that we can access that in over time, and that would become the register of all South Africans. So the question around CCMDD and standardization.
So, yes, the CCDD program is standardized in terms of the procurement process. So there are three suppliers, or currently two, that do the CCMDD programs. In other words, they dispense the medicines, pack them, and deliver them to a point where patients collect them. The variation comes in at a provincial level. So in other words, provinces may decide how they want the CCMDD program to work in terms of which patients will access it, which districts, etc. And so we need to work with our provincial colleagues to implement it within that context. Also, each province decides which drug should be on the CCMDD program and which drug should not be on the CCMDD program. So that to a large extent also limits the way that the standardization operates across provinces. Then in terms of the question relating to clinics not having medication, I think a huge problem that facilities have the SPS system that basically requires that they record what medicines are available. When the medicine is not available at the facility, it then flags to the district manager as well as the district pharmacist that this clinic doesn't have medicines, and it is done on a weekly basis. They are expected to intervene and then fix the problem. Then the system even then reports up to regional and provincial level, up to the HOD, who can see what facility is having a problem with which particular drug. And the problem is that the system reports, but if individuals in the system are not responsive to say, hey, this facility doesn't have these tablets, I need to now make sure that there's a delivery paid account, or whatever the problem is, then these problems will continue because it's only an alarm bell in terms of the way the system operates. Your specific question about warfarin, though, I think is a problem of a referral system. So when a patient is managed, for example, such as a coagulation problem, and that patient is referred to the primary care facility. However, warfarin is a drug that is kept at a hospital level. And when the patient is referred down to a clinic level, people do not think that they need to also make sure that the medicine is there, because there's no point saying to you, you can go to the clinic, but if the medicines are not transferred to the clinic. And our referral policies make it clear that referrals need to be linked to also the medicine. So there's no point saying to the patient, go to the clinic, but you say, this medicine is not allowed to be kept in the clinic. So how will the clinic ever be able to order that medicine? And this is one of the difficulties and problems that we have, where people refer patients down but don't think about the medicine, that medicine is not kept in the clinic. But it could certainly be transferred. So where it works efficiently is where provinces say, okay, this patient is on warfarin, he's stable, he can go and collect it at the clinic, and we transfer the stock to the clinic for that particular patient. And so that's the rational thing to do. But where it doesn't work, I think the problem that you have comes up. In terms of queues, CCMDD was supposed to be one of the measures that we're taking to reduce the queues, because we're saying, don't come to our facilities, collect your medicine from a facility that's close to you, like, for example, a private pharmacy, a GP, even they go to churches and do it, etc. So you don't come to the facility, you save your travel time, etc., and doing that and the costs linked to that. So that is the one area around queue management. I think Dr. Andrews will probably say a lot more about that as well. Chair, if I can now hand over to my colleagues to maybe respond.
Thank you, Honorable Members.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Chair, for the So I will focus on the response related to what is the plan related to filling of vacancies. And my response will only be directed to slide number 43, which is at national level. If the Honorable Member wanted to further get a response related to vacancies at provincial level through the acting DG, I will ask Dr. Gail to respond to that, if it's permitted. So in terms of that slide 43 of vacancies at health, at the national health, as you said, we were at 13.3 at that time, which is above the 10% that is set by the PPSA, that
no department should be having a vacancy rate that is above 10%. We explained that it was because we are in the process of restructuring the department to align it to the anticipated NHI bill. So during the current financial year, because this report is at the end of March, so for during the current financial year, we had 61 million set aside to fill vacancies. However, we have since reprioritized the funding so that we can deal with other issues that are at the priority, including the NHI bill. So within the department, at that time, we had 238 vacancies. If you calculate the 1694, less 1456 fill. So the 61 million was going to assist us to fill those posts, but we have since reprioritized, and we now have 25 posts that are now vacant, and we have a plan on filling the posts. We are in the process of already filling some of them, but one of the big adverts will be this coming weekend to deal with the prioritized critical posts. So the intention is that we would have filled all these posts if we recruit, we get the responses that we require by the end of the financial year. So our percentage will be lower, and the funding that has been reprioritized will be adjusted during the adjustment budget. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks. Let me address the issue about the provincial support. So we've had some collaboration with the South African Chartered Institute for Chartered Accountants in terms of provincial support on finances. But having said that, it's not necessarily a silver bullet to unqualified reports. In many instances, we only have one resource that we could allocate to a province. And in the case of Northern Cape and KZN, we have found that when you deploy this resource to the province, you need to have a very strong leadership in the province to actually manage that resource properly. So we haven't, in all cases seen that. In other cases, like Free State, we've seen it quite a bit. Kumalanga, we've seen it. Limpopo, we have seen it. Although Limpopo and Kumalanga still have got qualified reports, we have seen some movement in terms of the matters of emphasis, for instance. But it's also true to say that every financial year, new things come up. 2 years ago, we dealt with commuted overtime, right, successfully. This year, the evaluation of the medical legal claims became an issue. So, although we try to address them as they happen, in all instances, provinces do, are lacking some expertise in terms of the technical evaluations of some of these claims. So this is the big issue here. We do have earmarked funds over the MTF for this program, but for the current year, we have to ask provinces, although we paid for the service, we will also ask provinces to assist and even add to this resource as far as possible. The issue of consultants, in our case, on page 159 of the annual report, under note 5, you will see the amount for consultants, which is 39 million. Although it says consultants on this line item, it's a standard chart of account, please. 159. Note 5. Just to say, Chair, that in most instances, this, although it says consultants, it's a chart of account matter. So many of these are actual service providers, like a professional service provider for infrastructure, gets paid under line item. But we haven't appointed people as consultants within the department, bar one, if I remember. So although we have expenditure on consultant line items, we haven't appointed physical bodies as consultants within the department, except for the one that's also in our annual report. So in many cases, they get appointed to our implementing agents or to a tender process or supply chain process, and then it gets spent against the consultants. There was one more. Yeah. On the supply chain, on a regular expenditure, I just couldn't think of that right now, but I can make it available to give a breakdown from the AG report on what the regular expenditure was by province. I can say, in the case of national, at least we've reduced our regular expenditure as well as our wasteful expenditure. We've got an unauthorized expenditure. But some provinces, although they have improvements on the regular expenditure, some have progressed, and
which is on top of my head, I think carries in the place in terms of the advance on the daily expenditure. In some instances, provinces had difficulty in quantifying the regular expenditure. So when an auditor came, they would have an amount for the regular expenditure. The completeness of the registers was on the question. Tumalanga, that was a qualification matter two years ago that has been addressed. But you're correct, Chair, the regular expenditure is still an issue within many provinces. I think let me leave it there, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, Dean and Acting DG. I'm going to respond to the questions that the Acting DG has asked me to respond to, starting with the question around the number of interns that we employ every year. Now, in that annual report, the target was to absorb 100% of the interns that are produced in the medical school, particularly those who are South African permanent residents. Why we put it in a percentage is because from year to year the number of students produced differs. And but I do happen to have the accurate numbers. For 2019, for example, we employed, there were 1,883 interns who applied or who were produced in the medical school and applied to be placed in internship programs. Of those, only 1,756 eventually assumed duty, which means that only 93% really took up their positions. 110 actually rejected their positions because sometimes they're not happy with where they placed. Because we randomly allocate according to an algorithm we've developed to give everybody a fair chance, you know, and not give favoritism to some and not to other students. So they then I and some just decide they're not going to do the internship immediately, they're going to go on first with a gap year and things like that. And so we plan for that. We have a system called the ICSC, Intern and Community Service Program, Placement Program, which is an information system whereby we understand who are being produced in the numbers being produced in the university, and we understand those coming through, you know, through the pipeline so that we can plan to ensure that the numbers of folks are available. Why we make it 100% also is because it's statutory obligation. The Health Act is compulsory because it's a legal requirement that when you finish your medical degree internship, you must do internship. Likewise, all professionals must do community service. So if we make it a legal requirement, then it's an obligation upon us to ensure that they are forced to employ it. But in the sense for the comment, in future we can always put the estimated numbers that are in the pipeline. You know, some fail, some don't finish, and therefore if we put a target like that, sometimes we won't reach our target because not all will pass. But therefore we say eligible. Those who pass. But in future, we can put in the numbers that we in brackets with the percentages. With regards to the numerous challenges that were raised by honourable members relating to the human resources, for example, their attitudes, you know, being rude to patients, always putting in place plans to adequately train the health professionals, and do we have a plan to even ensure that we address the shortages of health professionals. I'd like to start by saying that we are currently finalizing the new HRH strategy, which main purpose is to ensure that we have a health workforce which is fit for purpose, which is, you know, adequate in numbers to address the disease burden of our population, and which is also equitably distributed across the provinces and between rural and urban areas, and also looking at not having inequity between the private sector and the public sector. so that we have more professionals in the private sector rather than in the public sector where they should be, where most care is delivered. And the strategy will also then look at how we create, make recommendations on creating positive workplace environments for health professionals, looking at education, training and development programs for them and making recommendations on them, on it, as well as leadership and management programs, because that's often where the weakness exists, especially at district level and mid-level managers, where people are not adequately supervised and not given effective supportive supervision. Those are the key pillars that that underpins the new strategy. But if we look at the current situation, we have many of these problems in place. But sometimes, like I say, supervision is not effective. People are not necessarily supported. There are not enough health professionals, especially nurses and doctors, where the biggest burden rests on them for care, nurses in particular. So they tend to get burnt out because they're constantly in a situation of seeing too many patients because our disease burden has increased, and also become more complex. So health professionals are faced now with patients who are more in number but also have many more problems as an individual. They're not just coming for hypertension or for one thing or for HIV. Even HIV patients are now having chronic problems. So it places a bigger burden. But in real terms, our number of health professionals has shrunk. It has not kept pace with the number of the population and the disease burden. So we find that a survey which was recently done showing that South African doctors have the highest rate of burnout globally. I don't know, I haven't seen a study which was done which is representative of the nursing population to be able to say what it is among nurses. But I could imagine that it could be even higher. And when one thinks of the signs and symptoms of burnout, it's when people feel helpless, they're depressed, they become angry, because they're constantly in the same situation. Now, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but there must also be supportive environments for them and care for them, and often that is not there. But we are now, through the new strategy, looking closely at that and putting in place programs to deal also with burnout and depression amongst the health workers. Then there are other mechanisms we have in place, like the complements and the complaint and complement mechanisms, where each facility has a complaint or complement box. And while we do get many more complaints coming through to the national department and which we do analyze, we also do find complements often. So it's not doom and gloom. Some they're just too few and far between. But I think if we, at the facility level, make effective use of our complaints and complement boxes and analyze that data, it can help us to improve things at the facility level. And we are working with health workers on that. And then, like I said, addressing the shortages of personnel in a time of tight fiscal constraints is a huge challenge for the department, but we are constantly working on reprioritizing, as the CFO and the DMS said, and also Ms. Rennie, and looking at how we can make more resources available to improve the situation on the ground. Then I think hopefully I answered the question around the human resources. Then I'd like to also just add to what Dr. Palaya said about the queues before I move to the question on the HPRS. The queues, they are, besides the CCMDB program, which was put in place to help alleviate queues with chronic patients getting it at a particular point, as Dr. Palaya explained. There are other processes that have been put in place in clinics to better manage patients, like the workflow, how patients must flow through the clinic, trying to put patients of a certain kind together. So we've seen those kinds of initiatives underway, driven primarily by the programs under Ms. Pele, but but I thought I'll add because I'm aware of it and I was asked to respond. Also trying to improve filing systems, trying to improve patient records and not having duplicate records and having, just like we're working towards one electronic record with a new HPRH system, which will be a patient-based information system, and eventually have an electronic record. We now have patient records, but sometimes you have multiple records for one patient, or you have records with many kinds of sub little records in one record, because you have a record for HIV, you have a record for antenatal care, you know. So hence, moving towards one electronic record will go a long way to streamlining work in clinics and therefore helping with the queues. And like DM said, when this system is functional and working properly, it will really help with queue management. But it's going to take time. It's not something we're going to achieve in 1 year, I would say. Now, Chair, in terms of the old health information system which we had and the new system, the main difference is the new system is going to be a system which is not an aggregated system as in the old one. The old system was a system whereby your patient remains a source of data, and then that data, whatever is wrong with the patient, gets recorded. And that, if it's a HIV case or if it's a TB case, we then aggregate it up, and at national we only get numbers. So it's only at the clinic or the facility level where they know the actual patient. From there it just becomes numbers. So many cases, so many incidents of this. But you still go back to your heart record, which is your patient, from which you aggregate your numbers. That was called the health information system, or DHIS. With a new system where we're moving to a patient information system, it is true that we eventually will have an electronic health record, which will be electronic. Anything that is electronic has a risk, you know, of being abused. But even the hard record, which we now have in the clinic, is protected because we have an act which protects personal information. So only certain people should have access to it, like the health professional who sees the patient, the clerk who draws the file, but it's people who don't protect the personal information of the patient, sex can be taken against them, okay? And we have measures in place of how we manage patient data. Even now, before the new system becomes available, when the new system becomes fully functional, we have to be even stricter. But the system will be designed in such a way that different people will have different levels of access. But yes, one of the reasons why people in another district or in another province, it will only be a health worker who will be able to see what's wrong with the patient. Purpose being to ensure continuity of care for the patient. So if a patient goes from Joburg, which is Gauteng province, to Northern Cape, instead of them starting afresh, they will be able to draw the electronic record of the patient and see, no, this patient is an old case of HIV, for example. The patient should not be tested maybe again, or this is the patient's viral load. Do we repeat it? Don't we repeat it? So the purpose is to improve patient management rather than, but only certain people will have access to the information, and different users will be given different levels of access. I don't know if you want to add. Oh, and then the patient experience of care survey, I suspect this one, the Western Cape have not conducted the survey, and therefore they don't have a rate, because the policy says that they can conduct it yearly if they want to, but they should conduct it at least every 2 years.
The
Nafisa Bowl, I thought you were going to answer you can just answer, please.
Okay, so on the Nafisa Bowl, Chair, the bill went through the National Assembly. He then also was considered by the National Council of Provinces. But what happened was that
the National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly did not conclude the bill at the point at which the first parliament had terminated its tenure. And the consequence of which, as I understand it legally, is that the process has to start again. I'm not sure if that's what will happen, but that would mean the bill would have to start again. That's what I was told.
Dr. Yogan, good afternoon, Honorable Members. On the issue of mosquitoes, so this was tried in Brazil. So there's a company that released, you know, quite millions of mosquitoes in one of the provinces in Brazil. And they genetically modified it so they couldn't reproduce. So they genetically modified the males so they couldn't reproduce. So what they found was that it worked, but there were still offspring, so it didn't work perfectly. So there were still offspring. About 3% of the offspring had now the new genetic material from the modified. So it's created another set of challenges. So the research is now, so there are two sets of researchers, one that are in favor of doing it and the other who say, well, we're creating a bigger problem. We're creating now a genetically modified offspring of these. So we are not using this methodology. So we're using Indo-residual strain using DDT to kill off the mosquitoes and the larva. And of course then early diagnosis, early and treatment. And you see our cases have come down quite dramatically, both cases of malaria as well as cases of malaria. So we're getting this. I mean, we don't have to do this just yet. So it protects us. It's a bit of a dangerous thing to mess with people's genetic makeup. On the issue, Honourable Member, on HIV, the good news from the Human Scientific Research Council study that was finished in 2017, published in 2018, shows that compared to 2012, the overall new infections have actually come down by about 44%. And in females, it's come down higher than in males, about 56% in females and about 18% in males. So we're doing the right thing. It's coming down. The challenge is that the numbers are very high to start. So it's coming down, but the numbers are still large. That's the challenge. You asked specifically, Honourable Member, about 15 to 24-year-olds, young people. And again, you can see the numbers are coming down. So the new infection rate was about 2% in females, 15 to 24, in 2012. It's coming down now to about 1.5%. But if you look at just numbers of young people, the numbers are still large. In about 2014-15, the number of young women, 15 to 24, that got newly infected in 2014-15 was about 2,000 a week. So that's very high.
Yeah.
It's come down now to about 1,400 a week. So it's still high, but it's coming down. We need to see it come down more rapidly. I mean, that's really the key issue. So there's some good news, but the numbers are still high. With respect to prevention of mother-to-child transmission, there we have probably the best news in the world, right? So if you look at what the percentage of transmission was in 2015, it was 1.8%. It's come down now to just under 0.8%. Our target was less than 1%. So we're doing rather well. Still, you know, to get over 1,300 new infections a year, it's still not acceptable. We wanted to be close to zero as possible. Our challenge, about 300,000 women who deliver in our public health sector every year by HIV positive, 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason that number keeps steady is because people are living longer because they are on antiretrovirals. So, you know, there's some good news and then there's some work that still needs to be done. But overall, the numbers are coming down. With respect to TB deaths, Honorable Members, there's a couple of questions around transmission, are we doing enough, why are the deaths? Now, the deaths of 3.9% have come down from about 6%. So there's some improvement, but we need to see it coming down further. One of the reasons, Honourable Member, the number is still this high, the twofold. One is that especially men are coming to our facilities for treatment very late, especially men. So, and that's true of HIV as well as TB and hypertension and diabetes and everything. Men just don't come to our facilities. So we really have to redesign our health system to reach people we are not reaching, young people and men in particular. The reason we're reaching women of reproductive ages, they come for contraceptives and they come to get antenatal care. So we need to do a bit more there. With respect to the cure rates, again, one of the reasons for the cure rate not being as high is people come late. There's also defaulting. Our defaulter rate is around 5-6% still. So we need to see that go down. And the only way to do that is to mobilize communities and to get our community health workers to track, trace, and return patients to care. And this is not just about TB and HIV, it's about all chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension. You know, we've got about 50% of diabetics and people with hypertension don't know they have either diabetes or hypertension. And those that have, and there's very poor compliance. So that's our new big epidemic, diabetes and hypertension, in addition to HIV and TB. And unless honorable members, we mobilize communities around this, the health system will not be able to do more than what we're doing now. The only thing we need to do is to get long-acting injectables. You know, for all the chronic diseases, people get an injection every 3 or 4 months, then they don't have to come to the clinic, they reduce the queues in the clinic, they adhere to the treatment. So there's a lot of new innovations going on in this area. So in the next few years, I think we will get far more long-acting injectables. That will help us. In terms of KZN, honorable members, the rates actually are not going up in KZN. In terms of prevention in schools, we are working with the Department of Basic Education, because they are the custodians of schools. And as you can see currently in the media, there's a lot of noise around the sex education, that DBE has argued would be a good thing, but many people are saying that's going too far, you know, telling young people about masturbation and all of that. So we need to balance these things so that it's also acceptable to people and communities. And thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you so much. In terms of infrastructure, the department does have the infrastructure plan. And the way it is being funded, it is funded in two models, either indirect or direct grant. But however, in terms of processing and ensuring that it's being implemented on a yearly basis, we develop a business plan as a national department. It means that the funding, there's funding that comes from the National Department of Health. We've got a team that goes out throughout the country accessing facilities. Also at national level, we've got teams that have gone out and identified key challenges within our health facilities. And from that information, we've been able to identify areas where we've got challenges and we have prioritized those. And those are funded through our national fund. Then in terms of provinces develop their business plan in terms of their needs. And they send that business plan to the National Department of Health, and then we are able to fund those projects. We, however, make sure that there is no double dipping, because if we've got two teams in terms of the funding model, the model that comes from the National Department of Health and that is coming from the province, we make sure that they don't go to the same facilities. We do experience challenges, and we do acknowledge the fact that our infrastructure in some of our facilities don't meet our norms and standards. You will find that you go there maybe to repair the ceiling. By the time you reach the facility, the flooring is in a challenge. So you find that the scope of work then changes. But however, we try to manage that. Just to be precise in terms of the question that was asked by the Honorable Member, we are currently active in 11 projects for Northern Cape. That I think we can be able to give you statistics, which facilities are we currently active. But however, we are now changing the model in terms of the funding of the project. We've got a task team that has been established by the minister and which is engaging with the national treasury in terms of changing, because we have to change the way we are funding the project at the moment to say how is it that we want to ensure that in terms of our 10-year turnaround time, we are able to implement as fast as we can, but making sure that it's coordinated structurally in terms of moving. But we've got projects that have been approved. We will continue with those. But those that are still going to be going through the process of approval, they will then go to the new model of funding that will be approved through the processes of engaging with National Treasury. Thank you so much.
That's great.
I don't know whether it's good news or bad news. It's about the infection. question. That it could mean that every group needs to be infected, is infected, so there are no new cases coming in. I just hope that is not the reason why we say that they say it's infected. No, I'm just saying that it's good news to know that there are no new cases of infection. So, which means that the infection rate is actually dropping and rising. And I'm saying, I just hope that it's not because a group will need to be infected, it's infected. Or that that's not the case.
Okay.
That's what that is for them.
No, Chair, it's not that there are no new infections. I think what the doctor Jürgen is saying, the rate is going down. The only problem is that at South Africa, at Southern Africa, in the whole world, we're starting from a high number. So even though it's coming down, comparatively, our numbers are still very high. But the good thing is that there's some progress. But just as members, that it's a difficult area, you know, as you know, the fact that the main mode of spread is sexual. You know, I mean, you can, we must keep researching, improving messages of communication, providing the devices, treatment, testing, condoms, and all sorts of PEP and PrEP, all those pre-exposure treatment and all those things. But the critical issue is that unless there's significant behavior change, and especially among our young people, and unfortunately these things are related, whether you talk about our problem of increasing drug abuse, you know, and alcohol at an early stage. The two, I mean, if young people start going to alcohol early, they also get into sex early under alcohol influence and drug influence, and they forget once they are in that situation, those messages which have been beamed all over, which they know about, you know, get forgotten. Yeah. But at least I think there is some progress. Just an update on the NAPISA bill is that it had been completed by the committee in the National Assembly, but it could not come to the House. It couldn't get into the program of the House before the end of the fifth parliament. So it's one of those bills which there is negotiation through the leader of government business to see how it can be. I think last week in the NA, there were a number of bills which had been which were accepted by the House to be revived, but NAPISA was not on the list. So I think there has to be negotiation with the leader of government to add it onto the bills which were read out last week to be revived. Lastly, Chair, just for me, just to say, especially you being also very key in provinces, just to say, as you know, health is a concurrent function. So it's a very complex. You will see that we are able to account better on programs which are driven nationally. You know, your TB surveillance, rolling out treatment, HIV, some of those programs, which malaria, which although implemented, but there's a lot of national driven kind of possibility. But a number of areas, the key actual outputs of health, which is confidence of people in the facilities, the basic, you know, management of that is at the provincial level, and we work with them to support. So we are hoping that increasingly we can improve our cooperation with colleagues in provinces, both at the political and managerial level, so that, you know, it's a very tricky area where you need not to tread on toes of other colleagues. you must discuss and influence, I mean, encourage, you know, even as a managerial, as a CFO, can talk to CFO's colleagues, but he can't literally manage their supply chain, you know. He can provide additional advice and assistance, but he can't go down to actual management. So that's where sometime, I mean, you know, things will always be complex, but we're hoping that with more collegial intergovernmental relations with our colleagues at the provincial level, we will be able to improve better. But I think in some of those areas, yourselves as also as representatives at provincial level, from time to time will sometime give you a call and say, in the Northern Cape, getting some difficulty in this area, as a representative, can you help? So, because it's the nature of the architecture of our constitutional system, you need to work through those systems and get better outcomes.
Let's say that on our visit to the Southern Cape, ne?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll share our experiences and what we, you know, we encountered. We'll share it with you, and but there's actually a lot of good things happening in the Western Cape that are not necessarily talked about, because the doctors are actually committed to them, and even taking us through and explaining almost everything, there was no resistance. So there are quite positive things happening. Of course, there are hiccups here and there. This brings us to the end of our meeting. We have a sitting at 2. We're supposed to have knocked off at 12 days, but we reach out into that time. So for members, the minutes will be dealt with in the next meeting, not today. I think this meeting is adjourned. Bye, adjourned.